In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh, my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo,
and this is the Mormon. Mitch, I know we talked about this a few weeks ago about how my church has come out and we're trying to get away from Mormon. Well, we had this big old conference this last weekend, and they reiterated it and basically said, if you're not doing it, you're goofing hard. So I need to think of a new name. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Is it what? So, what do you guys want to be called?
But so we're just the emphasis. Well, let's not get into this on the Sports Hour. The point is, we're gonna get all religious here. No, the point is, we're not trying to go by Mormons. We're just trying to go by members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is just a handful.
So it's the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and the member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
That's why I need to go by something different, because obviously that's just a lie.
We're sticking with Mormon for now. So, hey, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a kick-ass intro, bro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, hope you guys. Thanks.
There. That looks good.
Yeah, hope you guys enjoy the intro. We're always trying to look to improve things, to enhance things here on the Sports Hour. So we hope you enjoy. We've got today some more NFL. We love the NFL. And we're here to talk about Week 5. Not a whole lot, I think, significant out of this week. I mean, there's a few noteworthy games, I guess, to talk about, but I don't feel like anything really crazy happened this week, right?
No, I mean, there were some good games, that's for sure, but there was nothing really that stood out above everything else. So.
Right, yeah. But we're going to get into it. We've got a bunch of news to talk about today, which we will get into as well, and then, as always, our picks for this next upcoming week, which I am up still, and I increased my lead by one, so I'm up by four now.
That's right.
So
I got to work on that. I got to chip away at it.
It's only week five. We got a lot of time.
A lot of time left. I have to apologize to the listeners. Dallin, hit the sad music, guys. I don't have a top five again. Ooh. There's a lot of ideas in the works, but I need to apologize to the listeners. I know that's kind of one of our trademarks, one of our signature segments here on the Sports Hour, but Dallin's giving me some good ideas. So, moving forward, maybe next week we're going to have a top five list. Or maybe two. Who knows?
Ooh, we'll maybe two. Out. You know, maybe they got to be good. They got to be good. So, we're not,
they do.
You know,
I don't want to give you guys crap.
Yeah.
So.
We don't want to rush them just to put out something that's mediocre. It's all about good content here on the Sports Hour.
That's right. Hey, right? You know what? You know what goes great with good content, Dallin?
I don't know. You tell me, Mitch.
Great news. How about this? Let's get into the news. Let's get this thing started with NFL, since we're talking primarily NFL here today on the Sports Hour. Let's get started with the Jay Ajayi news. Torn ACL. Done for the year. Eagles have to resort now to either Corey Clement, they have Wendell Smallwood, and they have Darren Sproles to work on. I mean, how does this look going forward for the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, that's no bueno, obviously. Especially this, I mean, this is a guy they traded for midseason last year to kind of, you know, boost this this offense. And I think he contributed a lot in the run game and helped establish a really solid run game going into the playoffs. There are rumors. I mean, they've said that they're not going after Lev Bell. I think LeSean McCoy, though, from the Bills, is going to be an option for them to trade for if they feel it necessary. I don't trust this. I mean, Corey Clement is more of a pass catching back. Darren Sproles, a pass catching back. Wendell Smallwood, a pass catching back. So they need somebody who can run between the tackles. Somebody that could do what Jay Ajayi did for them. And I think LeSean McCoy is an option. I think they're going to have to trade for somebody here.
Absolutely. And there is news. Br- Breaking news here on the Sports Hour.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, it's coming out of Buffalo that the Eagles have been in contact with the Buffalo Bills about acquiring LeSean McCoy. Shady coming back to Philadelphia would be a great move for them. Makes a ton of sense, too. There's no reason for Buffalo to hang on to Shady at this point. And Philly needs the help right now at running back, because I think if you get Philly, that kind of phases out Wendell Smallwood and Darren Sproles for good, I think. Corey Clement probably gets 30% of the shares of the, you know, of the work. Wendell Smallwood maybe gets 10%, and Shady probably gets that other 60%. So I think it wouldn't be a bad move for the Eagles to go get McCoy. It'd actually be a great move. And it doesn't make sense for the Bills to hang on to him any longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And Clement has been productive when in the role that they've used him in.
He's not a bad back.
As long as they can continue. And that's the thing. Like, those guys are great, like I said, pass-catching backs, but expecting them to be, you know, first, second, third down running backs is just not what their strength is. So they need to find somebody that can do that. And yeah, McCoy makes the most sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something here in the next week or two, because they're going to need that help sooner rather than later. They do play Thursday night this week, so obviously not going to get him before this game, but that'll give them 10 days before their next game. And so I think there's a real chance we see him week 7 back in a Philadelphia Eagles uniform.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
All right, next news. Let's stick with the NFL. This one everybody knows about already. We just wanted to show our respects to one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Drew Brees set the record for most career passing yards, passing Manning's record of 71,940 yards. On that great 62-yard touchdown pass to Traquan Smith, which was just like awesome that he broke it with this awesome touchdown pass. Drew Brees. I mean, statistically, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever had. And he has years left, I think. So,
absolutely. I think one of the most under... Okay, I'm going out on a limb here. I think of the top five quarterbacks of this generation of quarterbacks, he's probably the most underrated because he doesn't get the Super Bowl love that a lot of other quarterbacks do. Quarterbacks like Tom Brady, quarterbacks like Ben Roethlisberger, he doesn't get the same kind of credit. But statistically, he's better than Big Ben. He's better than Philip Rivers. And one of those guys that's just consistently a 4,000-plus yard guy, a 30-touchdown guy, highly efficient, high completion percentage, and good for him. He deserves, and one of the good guys. One of the good guys in the sports. He's a very likable guy. So, just a good job for Drew Brees getting that done.
Yeah, you know, like you said, a great guy. It's hard not to like him. And the adversity that he's gone through, he had that major... was it a shoulder injury, if I remember right?
Yes.
And that, you know, I they were talking about it on the Monday night broadcast, but I think the doctors gave him like a 20 or 30% chance of like coming back from that injury the way he was before. And obviously persevered through that, was able to return from that injury. And now we've seen what he's done. And like I said, I think he's going to continue to, you know, pad those stats. And his passing record might be a record that is broken because of the modern NFL, but it'll stand, I think, for quite a few years, which will be cool to see.
Oh, yeah. That's a tough record to beat, especially – now, it might be more touchable in the kind of game that we play now, where it's a lot more pass-heavy than where it has been in the past. But Drew Brees was doing that before it was a super pass-heavy league. So
right, exactly.
Yeah, definitely a kind of a trailblazer pioneer in this style of football that we have now.
Yeah, so shout out to Drew Brees. Congrats. It's awesome.
Way to go, Drew.
Really, really cool. Really, really cool. So, all right, let's get into some NBA news. One of the most dysfunctional teams in the NBA, the Phoenix Suns, fired their GM Ryan McDonough 8 days before the season starts. Why? Nobody really knows. Why you wait to fire your GM until right before the season starts? I don't know. That seems strange to me. This is also the same team that fired Earl Watson, their coach, after 3 games last season. So they are very bad at managing their firings. They tend to wait for like the least ideal time to do this. I think it's just a sign of this function of this organization.
Yeah, I mean, when you get rid of your one of your big heads of the organization, just, you know, how many days away are we from the beginning of the season? I mean, it makes no sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me, because it's not like they're going to get a big blockbuster deal done during the regular season. It's not like they have a whole lot of pieces to trade away that they could get something big done. So why not just ride out the rest of the year and then take care of it in the offseason, so it's not such a freaking distraction? I mean,
yeah.
Now they're going to point to this as a distraction. And when it shouldn't be, the distraction should be that the Phoenix Suns are going to play terrible basketball this year. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's not good. It doesn't make sense. Like you said, I mean, if you knew you were going to fire this guy, why not have fired him in April at the end of the season, brought in a new GM, let him run the draft, let him run free agency, and then go into this full season having been there, as opposed to letting this guy draft for you.
Yeah,
and then fire him before the season. I don't understand that.
Yeah, if you didn't have faith in him to begin with, why would you let him make picks for the future for you? That's what I just don't get. I mean,
right, and then run a free agency for you. I don't know what could have happened in the last 2 or 3 months that made them realize that they needed to fire this guy, or if it's just a huge level of incompetence, which is what I'm leaning towards. This is just a very incompetent organization that just didn't do it right. So
yeah,
it's strange to say the least. He's been replaced by two guys that are basically filling this GM role. One of them, James Jones, is the most likely candidate to become the GM eventually, but they've said, at least for the time being, that James Jones and Trevor Buckstein will be the interim team of GM for this season.
See,
so,
and that just proves the dysfunctionality, because you can't have two guys be a GM, because there's obviously going to be, no matter how much you agree, Dallin, you and I agree a lot, but there's a lot of conflict sometimes too. We disagree. And especially in a business move, you can't have that stuff going on in the front office. You cannot have that clashing going on, especially when two guys are trying to do the same job. So you have to narrow that down quick, or you assign one of those guys as the interim GM and then start interviewing. But you can't. I don't think you can give that job split up like that.
No, I don't think so either. Like you said, just another sign of the dysfunction there. So, strange situation, but I guess more of the same from the Suns as from what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
The next bit of NBA news I wanted to mention, Kyrie Irving, who is an unrestricted free agent this season, has said that he intends to remain a member of the Boston Celtics beyond this season. He wants to re-sign next year, and he said this in front of, at an event at TD Garden in front of season ticket holders. A big deal if you're the Celtics. There have been a lot of rumors. Him and Jimmy Butler are good friends. They've talked about teaming up possibly in LA with the Clippers, possibly in Brooklyn. So if you're a Celtics fan, you should be elated that your star wants to return, because nowadays stars don't want to. The stars want to leave. We've seen it with Kawhi, with Paul George, with now Jimmy Butler. So good sign for Boston. Good things, I think, for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're getting Gordon Hayward back, coming back this year. And just knowing that Kyrie Irving wants to re-sign with you, that's a huge plus for that team. I think it makes them potentially the perennial top team in the East right now, in a very weak Eastern Conference too. So that's a good sign for Boston. Of course, you know how I feel about Boston. I don't care for Boston sports sometimes. Patriots, Red Sox, even Celtics. But I don't mind the Celtics as much, and I think this is a great move for them, and a great move for Kyrie, because he's going to have a chance to be the star there in Boston.
Yeah, no, it'll be great, and that's a guy you could build a franchise around, in my opinion. So, great that if Boston could keep him next summer. So, speaking of a guy we just mentioned, Jimmy Butler, as we have mentioned before, has requested a trade from Minnesota. Quite a few trades have fell through, especially with Miami over the weekend. They had a deal set, and then right before it was finalized, Minnesota came back, asked for more. Miami back to back out, and now we're still kind of in this limbo. But for the first time this whole season, he has showed up. He showed up today. This is Wednesday, October 10th. So he showed up today at practice. the practice facility for the Minnesota Timberwolves, practiced with them, and basically just embarrassed them. According to Woj and several other reports, he showed up to practice, ran a scrimmage against the first team with the third team guys, and absolutely dominated, and was just talking smack and targeting specific people like Thibodeau, the GM Scott Layden, Karl Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. At one point, he even yelled at Layden, "You effing need me, Scott. You can't win without me." And after dominating this entire practice, he then just walked out. And that was it. And that was the end of it. And according to reports, the players and the organization is just kind of speechless. They just got embarrassed. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard, Mitch. This is amazing.
This proves that Jimmy Butler is a madman. He has
yes.
no sanity left. When you say you want to get traded and then you berate your own team and coach telling you, you can't win without me. Almost like a move like, I dare you to trade me. Like he's almost trying to call him out and like call their bluff. Like, I dare you to trade me. And it just is so strange. It's so weird.
Yeah, it really is. And to me, this seems like Butler going back and saying, you've messed this up. I'm not coming. I don't think he's coming back. I think this is just him showing this is what you're missing. It's like if you broke up with the girl, Mitch, and then the next time you see her, she comes around and she's looking like real good. Like she dressed up. She's looking real good just to kind of show you what you missed out on. And then she's going to, like, she's not coming back to you. She just wants to show you what you're missing out on. This is what it's like for me. I think Jimmy's just showing them, this is how good of a player I am, and this is how bad of an organization you are that I don't want to play for you.
Well, why are you single me out on the whole girl thing, pal?
I wasn't trying to single you out. You're just, we're talking, all right?
But, yeah, we're having a conversation here. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that's what it seems like to me. That not that he wants to go back, it's just kind of like, this is what you're missing out on, you know?
That is a great analogy. When I do that, I put my best dress on and my best high heels on. And I let women know, you know, what they're missing out on. And then
you strut your stuff. Yeah.
I strut my stuff, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That got awkward really quick.
No, it was great. So I think we're going to see a trade. Miami has re-engaged talks with Minnesota, so they still want to trade for Butler. That is the most likely destination.
And I think that's a great landing spot for him too. Like I said,
I said in the
earlier podcast, he's going to go play under Dwayne Wade for a year. And I think this is a young man that really needs to learn how to be a team leader and to play under a guy like Dwayne Wade, who's been a great team leader for a long time. I think that would be a great move for him and the Heat. It gives him a better shot to win when you have Jimmy Butler, and it sets you up better for the future if you're going to get him long term. So,
yeah,
I think that could only benefit both sides.
Absolutely. I mean, he obviously has the passion, but maybe lacks some of the leadership skills. That's not very tactful to do what he did today, though. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're right on that. You know,
when I say both sides, I don't mean the Timberwolves and the Heat, because obviously the Timberwolves are losing Jimmy Butler. When I say both sides, I mean the Heat and Jimmy Butler. But
right. No. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, well, obviously, like we've said before, when we find out where he gets traded, we'll obviously talk about it on here. To me, it's inevitable. This kind of just makes things weird now, so I have no idea where we're going from here with that. And I think that's about all the news. We do want to mention before we get into talking about this last week's NFL games, baseball postseason is going on. We have the NL and ALCS locked, Mitch.
Yes, we do. That's right. We have the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox, like we called, go into the ALCS, and the Dodgers and Brewers, like we called, going to the NLCS. All four teams won their series pretty handily.
Yeah.
And so if that's any indication, I think that this is going to be two very competitive series. I think that obviously we know the Houston-Boston series is going to be a close series because those are two very, very good teams. But I think that the Dodgers-Brewers series is going to be the most intriguing one because I think it's going to be a heck of a lot closer than what people think it's going to be. Not to say that the Dodgers aren't talented enough, but I think the Brewers are really, really talented. So yeah. I think that this is going to be a very close series. we both said Dodgers, Astros in the World Series. Obviously, you had the Dodgers winning the World Series. I had the Astros winning the World Series. But I could see in the NL it being flipped a little bit. I could see it being flipped just because it's going to be that competitive. I'm still, really? I'm sticking with the Dodgers. I'm sticking with the Dodgers, but it's not going to surprise me if Milwaukee makes it, and which I think would be great for that team too.
Yeah. You know, it would surprise me if the Brewers make the World Series. Besides the Dodgers, the last 30, 40 games of the season, the Brewers were the hottest team in the MLB. It was like the Dodgers and the Brewers were the two hottest teams. And I mean, obviously that momentum is carried over into the postseason. The Dodgers are just a much more talented team and a deeper team. I think that's going to prevail in the end. It is an interesting mix of strategies. You have Craig Counsell and the Brewers kind of going really bullpen heavy, and the Dodgers are going to do the exact opposite. They're going to want six innings from their starters at the very least, because they have eight starters. I mean, Maeda, their setup man, is a starter. They have Ross Stripling. They have Rich Hill. They have all these guys that can start that they're using as relievers, but they have six legit starters. So they're going to be very starter heavy. Brewers are going to be very bullpen heavy. It'll be interesting to see how that, you know, turns out in the contrast of those, for sure. I would actually not, I'm actually the opposite on you. I would not be surprised if the Red Sox make the World Series, because, I mean, the Astros looked great. Don't get me wrong, the way they handled Cleveland, but the Red Sox look great. And they played a 100-win Yankee team, and pretty much, they dominated a few nights. They had close games at Yankee Stadium. Well, they won that third game. They pretty much dominated at Yankee Stadium, but had the close fourth game. And I don't know. I think this Red Sox team is for real, and I'm very excited to watch them play Houston.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I wouldn't agree with you. I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston made it either. I think in that series, you could kind of flip a coin and be okay with either outcome.
Right, we had them, both of this, in our predictions in a game seven, but Houston pulling it off, mainly probably based on just the fact that they'd been there last year. So,
well, I think it's the pitching. Houston has been the best pitching team in baseball this entire year. So I think, and what we said is, pitching is monument. It's paramount.
Absolutely.
In the postseason. So I think if there's anything that's going to get them past Boston, it's going to be the pitching, and because we all know how potent that Boston lineup is. So,
it is. So, I mean, we're going to have some good series. I'm very excited for both of these series. They're going to be close, six games at the very least, I think, for both of these. And we'll look forward to a really solid World Series matchup by whoever comes out of this, I think.
Oh, for sure. All right, so that's the news. That's your MLB wrap-up for the postseason so far. We have the ALCS and the NLCS kicking off, I believe, later this week. Am I correct, Alan? Do you know this?
Yes. NLCS starts on Friday, and the ALCS starts on Saturday.
Okay. So make sure to tune in for those games. Should be two great series. When we come back, we are going to get back into the NFL. We're going to be talking Week 5, highlight a few games. We're going to get into our Week 6 picks, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thank you guys for listening to the Sports Hour today. Be sure, if you haven't already, to follow our socials. You can find us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, and you can like our Facebook page. Be sure to follow those socials. Interact with us. We want to hear from you. Now back to the show. All right, guys, welcome back. Let us get into Week 5 of the NFL season. Like we said earlier, some really good games. I mean, we had four games that were won on game-winning field goals. So an exciting week, but not a lot, I think, to take away from this week as far as anything real significant or noteworthy going forward. Just some close games, some weird matchups. But we're going to get into what we felt like were the most significant parts, the most significant games of this week. So, Mitch, can we start by talking about my Carolina Panthers, please?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. We've been able to talk about your Bears for a little bit, and the Panthers really haven't had many significant games, but this last week they played the New York Giants in a game that was much closer than it needed to be, and they won it after the Giants had drove down, took back the lead, Panthers responded, and Graham Gano kicked a 63-yard field goal to win the game, which is tied for the longest game-winning field goal in NFL history, and is also second longest. The longest field goal of all time is 64 yards by Matt Prater, but tied for second was at 63, and it was a moment, man. It was freaking amazing. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, as a Panthers fan, obviously I was stoked, but just to see, I mean, that kick was beautiful. First off, I think it probably could have gone 70. Like, it really probably could have hit a 70-yard field goal. Like, it was that good.
Yeah, it was a fantastic kick. Now, we look back at the longest field goals in history, because Graham Gano's was a 63-yarder. We have, what's his first name? Something Dempsey.
I don't know his first name. But
kicker for the Saints, he was actually born with half a foot. So he kind of toe-kicked it, but he didn't have any toes. So, but he held the record for a long time at 63 yards. Sebastian Janikowski tied it in Denver. Jason Elam tied it in Denver. Uh-huh. And so for Graham Gano to hit it not in Denver.
Yep, at home in Carolina. Yeah.
In Carolina, where in Denver the ball flies further than anywhere else because it's up higher in elevation. For him to hit it, he really got a lot of leg into it. The longest of all time is Matt Prater, which I believe it was in
2013.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, a great kick, a good game. I think this is a good sign for the Giants that they put 31 up on a Carolina Panthers defense. That's pretty good. So I'm not reading too far into it, but I am going to say that it is a huge step forward for the Giants, and it definitely affected how I picked my games this week. Seeing how well they played against a tough Carolina Panthers defense.
Yeah, for sure. One, I think for the Panthers too, and I know I don't remember who talked about it. It's probably on a podcast I was listening to, but they talked about how, I think it was Bill Simmons actually, who talked about this is the kind of game where you look back at a season and you were like, how are the Panthers 12-4? And you look back at a big moment like this, and how that can propel a team forward. You know, winning game like that, it can have so much as far as momentum, the emotion behind it. Winning that game was huge. They get Thomas Davis back, who was suspended for the first four games, who will anchor that defense even more. Greg Olsen's coming healthy. I don't think he'll play this week, but should be available the week after. So they're kind of getting healthy again. They got this huge win with this big kick, you know, saved by the special teams. And I think this could do a lot for them moving forward. And also, it was just great to see. So, Absolutely. You know, yeah, a 63-yard game winner, you know, you can't beat it. So,
yeah, you cannot.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So, what's the next game you want to talk about?
You know what? Let's talk about Cleveland-Baltimore here.
Okay, another game winner.
Another game winner. Browns beating the Ravens 12-9 in a barn burner of a game, 12-9.
That's a lot of points. I don't know.
All NFL fans look for when they're watching football on Sundays is a 12-9 score. Isn't that right, Dallin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When you can score the same amount of points as like our Yankees Red Sox game, not very intriguing, you know?
Well, I think it's funny that the Browns scored as many points. They scored 12 points. That's coincidentally how many wins they have in the last 15 years. 12 wins.
Wow. 15. Right. that was false. You got me there.
That's
for
false.
The sad part about it is it's for a second I believed it. I was like, yep, sounds about right. And then I was like, wait.
See, yep, I got you good.
A sad organization. But no, yeah, but hey, a I good win.
And again, the Browns defense looked really good. We could say it week in and week out. The Browns defense is really good. And I don't think that this is a luck thing anymore. I think this is kind of what we're going to see out of the Browns defense is that they're actually really, really good. Now, granted, they held the Ravens to 9 points. Not the best offense in the NFL, but not the worst either.
No, offense has played well throughout. I mean, they've put a lot of points up on Buffalo. They put, I think, 40 on Buffalo.
Sure.
I mean, they've put up points before. So
they put up 40. They beat the Steelers by putting up, was it 26, 27 points on. Yeah. So this is a decent offense. So I don't think that I don't think this is a bad Ravens offense. I think this is a really good Browns defense. And like we saw again with the immaturity of the offense, that they know what they're doing. They're aware that they're on a football field and that they're playing football. They just haven't figured out how to put it all together yet. And I think that's going to come with maturity and experience on the offensive end of that.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna chalk all of that up to coaching. Really,
sure. I just
think that Hugh Jackson is not a good coach. And you look at a team like this, and you think, what could Sean McVay? Maybe that's an easy example, but even like what could Ron Rivera do with that? What could Doug Peterson do with that? What could some of these good coaches, maybe not even a great coach, but what could a good coach do with that? I think you look at a team that's probably 4-1. I mean, they've been close in like every single game. So
yeah.
I think, yes, there is immaturity on both sides, but I think a lot of it just comes down to coaching and, you know, the not being able to coach a good enough, not being able to scheme enough, a good enough game to allow them to win the way they should. I mean, obviously they won today and great. They're 2-2-1. That's probably a better start than we could have expected from Cleveland. But good win. But I don't know what their ceiling is just with, I think Hugh Jackson holds them back.
I wouldn't put it so much on Hugh Jackson because I think that he has very little to do with the offensive scheming. Now, the defensive stuff, Greg Williams is obviously the guy in charge, right?
Yeah.
He's the defensive coordinator for the Browns, and he's doing a great job.
Doing a good job, absolutely.
Greg Williams is an outstanding defensive coordinator. But their offensive coordinator is Todd Haley, a guy that's had a lot of success with Ben Roethlisberger, and then when he was with the Chiefs, had a lot of success. And so I think that he's working with a young quarterback. He's working with a young core group of players, and that is just going to take a little bit of time. So we could throw it back on coaching. I don't know if I'm on board with the coaching thing, just because I think that it could all fall back on that this just a young team, and Todd Haley's a good offensive coordinator. And he's been known as a difficult guy to work with in the past. I think that's kind of well known throughout the whole football community, fans, coaches, and players, that he's kind of a difficult guy to work with. And I think that's going to take a little time for him to build a rapport with Baker Mayfield, and it's going to take a little time for him to build a rapport with Carlos Hyde, Nick Chubb, and all their young receiver core with Antonio Callaway and all those guys. So it's just, I give it a little time. It's not going to be this year. It might be next year that their offense starts to really show what it's capable of doing. But they're really going to have to rely on their defense this year. And I think this is the defense that could do it.
Yeah. You know, and this AFC North is an interesting division. I don't know.
The most unpredictable division.
I don't know what's out of reach for Cleveland, honestly. I mean, because like you said, like they could be 5-0. If we're being completely honest, they've been close in every single game they played, and they've lost to the Raiders close in overtime. Right, that was an overtime game, right?
In overtime.
They lost to the Saints week 2, a team that had just been blown out by Tampa.
In overtime.
I don't think that was that overtime. I don't know if that one was overtime.
No,
it was
that was fourth.
It was a close game. It was a close game. And then they tied Pittsburgh week 1. So, I mean, a little bit extra on any of those games, they could be 5-0. So, I don't know what the ceiling is for this team and what is unavailable to them going forward. I think there's a lot of possibilities for them. I mean, I just don't know what they can reach. Does that make sense?
I mean the Steelers, they blew out the Falcons this week, and I think that was more the Falcons did not look good at all, because I still don't have a whole lot of faith in Pittsburgh. But every single week the Browns look more and more like a playoff contender to me, and that may just be me, I don't know. But they look more and more every single week like they could contend when it comes down the stretch. Now, I'm not saying that they're gonna be a playoff team, but they're definitely showing signs of that. Am I wrong in that assessment?
No, they definitely look more competent to me week by week. I can say that for sure. They definitely look like more and more like a good football team. Is that going to translate to a playoff spot? Who knows? We're 5 weeks in, and we don't know how the division will shake up. We don't know, you know, injuries, whatever. But they are looking better every week, I think. And you're going to see that in a young team. And so that's why I'm like, I don't know what the ceiling is. I don't know if the playoffs are completely out of the question for them. I think they have the talent to be that level. I just don't know if it's going to happen because of the age, because of Hugh Jackson, and maybe what holds them back. So
I mean, I do
one of my favorite
out.
Teams this year. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I do want to throw out too that the Cleveland Browns right now are 2-2-1. Okay, they're third in the division. They have scored one of the fewest amount of points in the AFC. Only 114 points scored, but they've given up the fourth fewest points in the NFC at 113. The only teams that have allowed fewer are the Jaguars, top-tier defense. Titans, surprisingly top-tier defense. And the Baltimore Ravens, top-tier defense.
Right.
So they are competing with top-tier defenses here, because I don't think the Titans defense is as they might be as good as they look. I don't think they are, but they could be a top tier defense right now.
Yeah, I am with you. And that's, and like you said earlier, that, I mean, the winning formula for them, at least this year, and I think moving forward, is rely on the good defense, do enough offensively. We'll see if they can do enough offensively, because I think the defense has shown so far this year that they are legit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk about one of those teams you mentioned. The Jacksonville Jaguars took on the Kansas City Chiefs in a matchup of what, you know, a lot of people see as the number one defense versus the number one offense, the explosive Chiefs versus, you know, this stingy Jags defense. And Kansas City pretty much handled this game. I mean, didn't really have a lot of issues, scored 30 points, only gave up 14. What was surprising to me about this game is how competent Kansas City's defense looked. And I don't know if that's just Blake Bortles and the Jags offense being, you know, what it is, or if Kansas City's defense is actually getting better.
Yeah, I honestly think it was more Blake Bortles. I do. And you know I'm a Blake Bortles truther. But, I mean, 33 for 61. He threw for 430 yards, but one touchdown and four picks is not going to get it done.
Four picks, yeah.
I mean, that's not going to get it done. And so I think it was – and they weren't hard, difficult picks. They're pretty easy picks.
He also had a lost fumble, so five turnovers.
I also think, though, that the absence of Leonard Fournette is really having an effect on this team. TJ Yeldon led the team in carries with 10. So this was a team that was really relying on Blake Bortles right now. Throw the ball 61 times. And what did I say since the beginning? You put Blake Bortles in the right system, and you can't have him throw the ball 61 times a game. When he throws the ball between 25 and 30 times a game, he's successful. But you don't have a workhorse to run the ball, and he's not going to be put in a position to succeed. He's a system quarterback. So, you know, I put it on Blake Bortles, but also I think more so the absence of Leonard Fournette really is detrimental to this Jacksonville defense or Jacksonville offense.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I don't know. I think the fact that this Chiefs defense gave up 500 total yards and held Jacksonville to 14 points is significant to me. And they forced five turnovers.
See, but the 500 yards thing is not. You don't hold a team to 500 yards. You let a team.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. They let them get 500 yards and still held them to 14 right. points. And like that to me seems like a bend not break. And I am actually impressed with this Kansas City defense, because I thought they looked pretty good against Denver on Monday night the week before. I mean, Denver's not the most prolific offense, but when it came time for them to perform, they did. They pressured Case Keenum a lot in that game and really threw off that offense of Denver. I think they've had two good showings this week, and I'm not saying Kansas City's defense is great, but they might be competent enough. If they can perform like this going forward, this Chiefs team is very dangerous, because the biggest issue that I have with the Chiefs is their defense. So if they can have just a competent defense, maybe just a top 20 defense, I think this team's sure, very absolutely. Dangerous.
I mean, and can we talk about Pat Mahomes again, getting it done without throwing a touchdown pass? He threw two interceptions.
And two interceptions. So obviously this, yeah, I mean, this Jacksonville D definitely got to him, you know, and I think they, you know, obviously, and this is 2 weeks in a row. He's played good defenses, hasn't had this spectacular game, but got the win. And that's what you need to see from this young quarterback. So great, great showing for Kansas City. If you're a Jacksonville fan, are you worried about them? How do you feel about them? Does this game matter much? What are you thinking about this?
I'm more worried about when we get Leonard Fournette back. I'm going to stand by the fact that Leonard Fournette is such a huge part of that offense and that he needs to be there to run the football in order to have Blake Bortles be successful.
Yeah.
So the sooner that he comes back, the better for Jacksonville.
I'd have to agree with you. I wouldn't be too worried. Yeah, the Fournette thing's big, and that's going to make Bortles better. Good running game is going to make Bortles competent at the very least. So, you know, I think we're okay. I think they're okay. The defense is still solid. Just, you know, let's get Fournette back and healthy, and let's establish this run game again. So another matchup of top teams that have obviously underperformed this year: Minnesota Vikings going to Philly, taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked about this in our picks last week. That to me, this seemed like a must win for Minnesota, not quite a must win for Philly. And Minnesota pulled out this game on the road, 23-21. So they're at 2-2-1. Philly's at 2-3. I don't think either team's out of it. What did you think of this game?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It was a must win for Minnesota. I think you cannot fall to 1-3-1 and feel good going forward for the rest of the year. I mean, then you're in serious panic mode from this point on until the rest of till the end of the season.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins played very well, 30-37, 301, and a touchdown. No run game, though. Latavius Murray was their leading rusher at 11-42, 3.8 a carry. So the absence of Dalvin Cook, having a healthy Dalvin Cook is so important to them. And I would really honestly say that the Vikings should punt right now for a few weeks. Like, just really almost, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a pansy. Play not to lose, I guess, because they can't win without a run game. This goes back to the whole Jacksonville thing. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback when he has a run game with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he played pretty well without a run game, and we've seen him do it in Washington when he didn't have a run game and he played pretty well. But he can be a winner when he has a run game with him. And I think Dalvin Cook's the only way that they're going to have a legitimate shot at, you know, being a favorite week in and week out. So Latavius Murray's not a workhorse type of guy. They need Dalvin Cook back. And it's just kind of a sticky situation for him. They need to figure out a way to get a run game going and get Latavius Murray going. I mean, 3.8's not bad, but when you're only giving the ball 11 times a game, that's troubling. That's troubling.
Yeah, and I think, like you said with Bortles, I think any good team, like, you have to have... Yeah, you have to have a run game. You can't be one dimensional in any way, pass or run. So having Dalvin Cook back will help. I think the defense looked better today, but Philly hasn't really looked that good either. And I'm not worried about this Philadelphia team. We talked about this a few weeks ago. We did a like it, love it, hate it. You know, the Eagles win the division at 9-7. I stand by that. I legit think they will win this division still, but they'll probably be 9-7. And that's not ideal. But this is a team that's been there before. I think this is Super Bowl hangover. I think this is just rusty. I think end of October, November, they're going to turn it back on and they'll, you know, win this division, because there's nobody else in the NFC East that I even feel confident in. But you don't want to lose these kind of games at home. And it's not a good look, but, you know, I don't know. It's a weird game and two weird teams this season.
These are teams right now that should be far outperforming what they're actually doing right now. Defensively, they were supposed to be 1-2 as far as defenses go. Jacksonville is supposed to have the best defense, and you could probably flip those two. There's probably a lot of people that thought Minnesota was going to have the best defense. But they struggle so much offensively that it's really disheartening to see two teams really play so poorly week in and week out just because they don't have the run game there. So, I mean, the sooner Leonard Fournette comes back for Jacksonville and the sooner Dalvin Cook comes back for Minnesota, the better.
Yeah. If you're an Eagles or a Vikings fan, should you be worried? Or is this just it's early season and it's going to get better.
I think it's going to get better. I think it'll get better. I think that defense, if it really shows up, that's kind of the reason they were there last year anyway, was their defense. So I think I think it'll get better for Minnesota. I really do.
And the Eagles?
Oh, if they get Shady, yeah, I think so. I think we're looking at a 9-7 team, like you were talking about, or a couple weeks ago. We were looking at a 9-7 team. Because defensively, I don't think they're there. I think they're just middle of the road. And Carson Wentz is obviously not back to full form. So I think that for them, they're really going to have to add another piece there. And Alshon Jeffrey hasn't been healthy the entire year either. So
yeah, they just seem out of sync to me. That's just kind of it. It just doesn't seem like right. It reminds me a lot of my Panthers after the Super Bowl year. Everything was just kind of like off all season, and they just couldn't really figure it out. And sometimes it happens. I think they'll turn it around eventually, but I think if you're a fan of either teams, don't worry too much. If in 2 weeks from now you still haven't figured it out, then worry. But we're still early in the season. I do want to point out something, give some shout out and some love to Adam Thielen. He's the first wide receiver, the first player in NFL history since the NFL merger in 1970 to start a season with 100 yards in each of his first five games, which is just absolutely spectacular. I think you have to put him up when you talk about wide receivers in the league. I think you have to put him up there with the Antonio Browns and the Julio Joneses and the DeAndre Hopkins and the Odell Beckhams. I think you have to put Thielen in that conversation now based on what he's done these last few seasons.
Oh, God. If Thielen hit double-digit targets every single week this year, he is the first receiver in NFL history to have over 100 yards receiving in the first 5 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. The guy is unreal. And that's going to be their saving grace going forward, is Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, to be honest with you. That's going to be...
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be their saving grace. If they can get Laquon Treadwell going a little bit more, if they can get Kyle Rudolph involved in the red zone, they could ride this on the passing game. We've seen teams do it. The New England Patriots do it every single year. They ride their way offensively through the playoffs into the Super Bowl, doing exactly what the Minnesota Vikings are going to have to do, which is throw the football. So,
yeah. Well, and I think they have a quarterback that's capable of that. Kirk Cousins has thrown for like 4,000 yards the last three seasons. So he's able to throw the ball, and he's got some great targets to throw to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Last game of the week. Let's talk about Rams at Seahawks. And this is a game when we made our picks. We obviously both chose the Rams. I had this as like a blowout. Mitch, you said something I didn't agree with, which was that this game would be a lot closer than you thought. And you gave a lot of credit to Seattle and playing at home. And my friend, you look really good, because it was a very close game, a game that the Rams had to come back and win.
Well, yeah. Well, CenturyLink's always a tough place to play. CenturyLink, correct? Yes.
Yes.
CenturyLink is always a tough place to play. The 12th man, right? The 12th man is always a big factor there. Now, it was a 33-31 game, which is kind of unconventional for playing in Seattle. Usually you see a low-scoring game here. But that Rams offense is so prolific that you knew that they weren't going to put fewer than 20 up. I mean,
yeah,
it's the best offense in football. It is. But Seattle putting up 31 on a pretty tough Rams defense. Like, a Rams defense is probably a top five defense. I would put them up there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
They might be even third behind Jacksonville and Minnesota going into the season. Now I would put them up a little bit higher. But Seattle did a good job. They held their own. I'm putting this more on the Rams winning the game than Seattle losing the game, because Seattle played very, very well against a really, really tough LA Rams team.
Yeah, well, and last year, the game that the Rams went to Seattle, they embarrassed Seattle. I just dominated them throughout the game. I think this, you could feel better about this as Seattle, to know that you held your own with what is the best team in the league. Interesting, you know, Seattle, kind of a more traditional Seattle game. They definitely had more rushing yards than they did passing yards. They really relied on the run. But Russell Wilson was efficient. I mean, his completion percentage, 13 for 21, isn't good, but 3 touchdowns, no picks. They didn't turn the ball over at all. Jared Goff had 2 interceptions. The defense stepped up on that end. But they relied on Chris Carson, who had 116 rushing yards. Mike Davis, 12 carries for 68 yards. They really relied on the run game, which I think is more of a traditional Seahawks game, and the defense creating turnovers. I just think that this Rams team is just too good. And Todd Gurley in the red zone is literally unstoppable. If you have Todd Gurley and you're at first and goal, second and goal, third and goal, fifth and goal, I don't care. He's going to score. And that's it's just, it is what it is.
He's probably the only player in the NFL that can score on fifth and goal.
I would put him there. He had 3 touchdowns on 77 yards. They were all goal line rushes. Both, 2 of them, 2-yard touchdowns, 1 of them, a 5-yard touchdown. And that's like I said, you just can't stop that. And Seattle just ran into the best team in the league and had probably their best game of the season, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, Russell Wilson was 13 for 21. Okay. Low passing game for him. 198, right. But 3 touchdowns and no picks. And that's exactly what Russell Wilson does. He does not turn the ball over. He's very efficient with the football. Chris Carson, this is the guy I want to highlight here. Like we said with the Browns, every week they look more and more like a contender or more competent. Week in and week out, Chris Carson looks more and more every single week like a very serviceable running back. 19 for 116, 6.1 yards a carry. Mike Davis got the touchdown, but he was 12 for 68, 5.7 a carry. I mean, they really ran the ball well against a good run-stopping defense. So I would say going forward, keep an eye on the Seattle rush running game, because they obviously, it was a glaring problem with them last year that they did not have a run offense at all last year. Russell Wilson was their leading rusher and their leading passer. He probably could have been their leading receiver if he wanted to. They're showing to be competent running the football, and Chris Carson and Mike Davis definitely aren't the names that come to mind when it comes to competent running backs. But
nope,
Chris,
not
but
at all.
Chris Carson is every week showing that, you know, he could be that guy going forward.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing an improvement from him. He has 293 yards so far this season on the ground. Seattle, 8th in the NFL in rushing yards this season. So, and that's the formula for winning for them. They're what, 2-3? So not terrible. I still not very high on the Seahawks team, but this is a good step in the right direction if you're a Seahawks fan. I think you can be, you're never happy with the loss, especially against a divisional team, but I think you can be okay with especially how your team performed.
There's one more player I want to highlight out of this, and I think that that's Cooper Kupp and how he is becoming the next really good young wide receiver. He's shown week in and week out that he gets the target share. Obviously, he's one of Jared Goff's favorite targets. He can catch the football well. He's kind of that mid-range target type guy. He's going to get a target between 12 and 15 yards or even up to 20 yards. But he could stretch the field a little bit. He was 6 for 90, 15 yards a catch with a touchdown. So keep an eye on Cooper Kupp moving forward. I know that he had a pretty decent rookie year, and now he's showing that he can be a very, very reliable receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think probably the favorite weapon of Jared Goff. He loves him. He loves him.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Robert Woods is not all that reliable. He can be. But then the other guy he's got to go to is Josh Reynolds right now. And so it's...
Right.
So really, it's Woods and Kupp, a pretty weak wide receiver core for such a prolific offense, right?
Yeah, for sure. All right, that's about all we want to talk about for week 5. Let us get in to some quick picks.
Let's go. So, hey, we got Philadelphia. They're leaving the city of brotherly love to head to the Big Apple. I said that weird. They're going to the Big Apple to take on the New York Giants. I have the Giants in this game, and I'll tell you why.
Oh.
I'll tell you why. They, like I said, they looked really good this last week against the Carolina Panthers defense. Philadelphia's defense has not looked all that solid going forward. Saquon Barkley is a huge contributor to that offense. Eli Manning's holding his own. He's got a pretty solid selection of weapons to throw to here. And against a Philadelphia defense that's struggling, I like New York at home.
All right. I think, you know, I don't hate that pick. I'm going to go Philly. I think this isn't a must win, but it's pretty close to one. For Philly to go 2-4 would not be good, especially you have Washington who has to play Carolina. You have Dallas that plays Jacksonville, and then you play your division rival New York. A win here puts them at 3-3, and I don't think Dallas and Washington are winning, so that would give them the division lead and kind of get them up there. I think this is a win you need to have if you're Philly, and I think they're going to pull it off.
All right,
another divisional matchup, Tampa Bay traveling to Atlanta. Atlanta got torched last week, 1-4. Not a very good start for them. Tampa 2-2 coming off the bye. I have Atlanta at home. I don't like Jameis Winston for obvious reasons. I don't think he should be the starting quarterback at Tampa. And I don't think Atlanta, this is going to be a shootout. Atlanta has enough offense to beat Tampa.
I'm with you. I do not believe that Jameis Winston should be the starting quarterback. It should still be Ryan Fitzmagic. Should still be under center, even though he's probably Ryan Fitz tragic right now. I don't see this being a shootout, though. I see Atlanta winning this handily.
Really?
By
okay.
At least 13 points.
All right.
After that, we have Pittsburgh leaving the Steel City. They're going to travel to the Buckeye State to take on the Cincinnati Bengals. I have Cincinnati winning this game. I really like what Andy Dalton's been doing. The Pittsburgh defense has continued to look pathetic, even though they held their own against an Atlanta offense. It's pretty stout. I think that their win last week was more that the Steelers' offense has turned it on. I got Cincinnati and Pittsburgh in a fairly decent game. I got Cincinnati.
Yeah, I have Cincinnati as well. Cincinnati has looked good. Cincinnati has been a very good team offensively and defensively. And I do not believe in Pittsburgh. I know they beat Atlanta, but I don't know what that really means now. I really, week five in the NFL, I don't know what Atlanta really does for you. I think Cincinnati's a better team, and at home, I don't think Cincinnati loses so I got the Bengals.
So, A.J. Green, over under 90 yards, and a touchdown.
Over. Yeah, he'll get 100.
Yeah, I'm going to hammer the over on that one as well.
Yeah, I think he'll get 100. I mean, this, I think, could be another shootout kind of game. You know, Cincinnati can put up points. They battled in a shootout with Atlanta, and then the next week, Pittsburgh battled in a shootout with Atlanta. I think coming together, this might be a shootout. Hopefully, it's not an ugly game. These teams always play stupid and like try to kill people on the field. Let's not do that. Let's just play football,
absolutely,
guys. I'm not here for that. So
I agree.
Okay, we have another game in the Buckeye State. The Los Angeles Chargers and their 80 fans. They're leaving them in L.A. They're coming out to Cleveland, to take on Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. I have the Chargers in this game. I think they are better than they look, and we will talk about this after you give your pick, because I know we talked about this a little bit before the show. I love Cleveland. I think this will be a tight game, but Chargers pull it off on the road.
Yeah, I got Cleveland in this game. That Browns defense looks stellar, and especially going and playing in front of their home crowd. The dog pound is going to be alive there in Cleveland. And so I got Cleveland over the Chargers. The Chargers defense does not look solid. I think Baker Mayfield has a real shot to have a heyday on that Chargers defense. So I'm going to take Cleveland over LA. But yeah, we talked about this before we started recording. You said that the Chargers haven't had any good wins, but they have had good losses, and that's
I didn't say they didn't have any good wins. You suggested that they haven't had any good wins because they beat the Niners without Jimmy Garoppolo. They beat Buffalo, which we don't know anything about, but they're 2-3, and they beat the Raiders last week, which obviously not a very good team either.
So tell me which one of those is a good win then.
Well, I think they played well against Oakland. They handled that game pretty well, 27-17. So it wasn't really a close game.
But quality wins.
That's a good win. Oh, the win against Buffalo is good. You shut them out. It was like 22-0 or something like that. I think that's a good win.
Playing
that's not a
Buffalo.
Bad win.
Playing Buffalo.
Yeah, a Buffalo team that has beat Minnesota and now Tennessee, which are both kind of playoff teams.
Think about it in baseball
fringe
terms.
Playoff
think,
teams.
Think about this in baseball terms. Quality starts. If you give up 4+ runs in 6 innings, is that a quality start?
No.
No.
No,
it's not. It's
okay,
not.
Okay, here's the thing.
If you're playing the Oakland Raiders and you beat them by 16, is that a quality win?
Yeah, that's a good win. That's a good win.
What are you talking about? They're playing the Oakland Raiders. They're
how's
anemic defense. What are you talking about?
How much did the Rams beat the Raiders by? Probably about the same.
They beat them
so
by
is that not
they beat them by 20. They beat them by 20.
I don't
yeah,
think it was
Yeah, it was 33-13. You can look it up. Look it up right now.
I'm gonna look it up real quick.
Yeah,
no,
they beat that. They beat them by 20. It was 33-13. That's not a good win. The Oakland is not a good win this year. We've established that Oakland is not as good as that we thought they're gonna be. And this is
yeah,
not
it was 33-13.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, here's what I will say. Here's what I will say. Okay, you look at the Chargers' schedule, and we were both pretty high on the Chargers going into this season. You look at their schedule to start. They played Kansas City. They played the Rams. They played the Raiders. The Buffalo Bills and what's the other team? The
Niners.
Okay. You look at their season. You look at those first five games, and what's the record you're going to give them? Well, like how many of those games are going to win before the season? Before anything happens, how many wins are they going to get?
At least three, maybe four.
Three. Okay, and they're 3-2. So how could we be like they're underperforming? That's my issue. Like they won the games they should have
because
won,
those are games they're
they
supposed
lost,
to win,
and they lost the games that they should have lost.
Because
we wouldn't have had them beating the Rams. We maybe would have had them beating the Chiefs and the Niners with Garoppolo maybe would have been close, but they won the games they were supposed to win. They lost the games they're supposed to lose. They're right where they should be. So I don't understand.
So, but I was high on the Niners before the season started. If Garoppolo is there, I don't think they win.
Perhaps not. And we don't know because he wasn't, but they won the games they were supposed to win. They lost the games they're supposed to lose. I don't think this is a big deal. They also haven't had Joey Bosa, who should be, who we thought would be the defensive player of the year going into this season. They haven't had him all season. And I don't think this team is as bad as we may think.
We also thought the Raiders were going to have Khalil Mack, and the Raiders don't have Khalil Mack. And then they put 26 up on him. So that's not a quality win. That's not a quality win if you're playing a team that's inferior to you.
Yeah, if you barely beat them, the Niners win isn't a quality win. They barely beat the Niners with CJ Beathard on the road. Shouldn't, but they handled the Raiders. They handled the Bills. What else should they have done? Like, not every team is, like, the Panthers had a quality win, but they beat the Giants by 2 points. That's not good. That's not ideal. You should have beat that team by 15, but it's still a quality win.
I don't know.
I'm not buying the chart. And that's fine. All I'm saying is, in my opinion, they're exactly where we would have had them in the beginning of the season. So I don't see how we could have, I don't see how they could be low in my head because I think they're right where they should be.
Okay.
So, we'll see. And this is going to be a good test because they're playing on the road in Cleveland against a good defense. I think a win here is a very good showing for them, and a loss, not very good.
Okay. All right. So after that, we have Buffalo. They're leaving. What is New York's state name? I don't know.
The Empire State.
Is the Empire State. Okay. Yeah, well, they're traveling to the Lone Star State to take on the Houston Texans at home. I got Houston. I like the way this team's headed. Where this team's headed, they get Dante Foreman back soon. Lamar Miller's got to get going. But I think Houston basically based on the fact that they're just a better team than Buffalo.
Yeah, you know, I am reluctantly going to go with Houston here. Buffalo has just been so weird this year that this seems kind of like the kind of game they could win. It's either they're either going to win this game close or they're going to get blown out by like 15 points. So I don't really know how this is going to go. So I'm going to go Houston. But Bill O'Brien should be fired. He is not a very good coach, and this team should be a lot better than how they look right now. So
yeah, sure.
I would not be shocked if Buffalo wins this one on the road. Just one, because of Houston, but two, just because of how weird the Bills have been this year. The next game we have the Bears back from the bye, traveling to Florida, the state of oranges, to take on Ryan Tannehill, of all people, and the Miami Dolphins. Chicago's going to win this. I don't think this is going to be close. Maybe it would be close coming off the bye. Maybe there's a little rest there, but Chicago's clearly the better team. And I think they're going to take this one on the road.
Da Bears. That's all. So after that, we got Arizona. They're traveling to play Minnesota, to play the Vikings. I got the Vikings at home. Arizona, we know, it's not a good football team. They're just coming off a win against San Francisco, which that was a game I was actually at.
Yeah, at how Levi's was that, team. By the way?
It was good. You know, it was sitting higher up, so I could see the plays develop, which was kind of a nice thing. It was kind of like watching film in live time. So it was kind of cool. But I got Minnesota beating Arizona. I really think that Minnesota, just, again, the better team. And not for any other particular reason other than that they're the better team.
Yeah, and coming off this win on the road in Philly, I think that's huge. Coming back home, I mean, this is a must win. You can't lose it. I mean, you already lost to Buffalo at home. You can't lose to Arizona at home, which is what we thought probably 3 weeks into the season as the two worst teams in the league. So, I have Minnesota winning this one as well.
Absolutely.
We have a matchup between the Colts and the Jets. Andrew Luck traveling to the Garden State, New Jersey, to take on the New York Jets. I have the Colts in this game. I think the Colts are better than their record. They're 1-4 right now, but they have been close in pretty much all of their games, and they haven't looked terrible. They are missing pieces on defense. They are missing a run game, but Andrew Luck is still being productive, and against a team in the Jets that is young and not that good, I think Indianapolis pulls off the win.
Yeah, I'm with you on there. I have Indy on the road as well. This is a team that is, I think, a little bit better than what the record shows. 1-4 might be appropriate, but 2-3 seems a little bit better for me. They've been close in every game. And Andrew Luck, I think, is going to hit. Okay, hot take. Hot take of the week. Andrew Luck will have 350 passing yards and 3 touchdowns this week.
Okay, yeah, I think he'll pretty much tear up that Jets secondary. I could buy you on that. I'd buy that.
All right. Well, Seattle, they're going to leave the Emerald City, and they're going to travel down to the black hole, the Bay Area, to take on the Oakland Raiders. I have the Raiders at home. I think that Seattle is going to struggle on the road this year, and when they're away from home, just because of the personnel that they have going on. And I think that Oakland's a little bit psyched up after this last couple weeks. I think they're going to come off this loss to the Chargers and bounce back and get a win against Seattle, a good quality win.
I have to agree with everything you said. Seattle's not going to play well on the road this year. I 100% agree with that. They've won the two games they won were their home games. So already haven't played well on the road. Marshawn Lynch is going to have a great game against his former team. I think he rushes for 100 yards on Sunday. That's my little, I guess you could call it a hot take. I don't know. It's just my
it's very plausible.
My inkling. He's going to have a good game against this team. And yeah, I think Oakland pulls this in a close game, but Oakland pulls this one off at home. My Carolina Panthers go to face the NFL team in Washington at FedEx Field. I have Carolina in this game. Washington has looked good at some times and also not looked good at other times, and definitely did not look good against New Orleans on Monday. Carolina got the huge win, like we talked about this last week. I think they ride that momentum to a comfortable win against Washington.
I have Carolina winning this game. I'd rather not shave my head than you get a tattoo. So
this 2-2 start from Washington does have me worried a little bit. Not a lot, but mainly because the rest of the division has looked so shitty that I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe they could win it at 8-8, and I definitely don't want to get a tattoo. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, but Carolina's going to win on the road.
Yeah, well, I need them to, for my butt's sake.
For your butt's sake. For the sake of Dallin's ass, can you just win on the road, Carolina? Hey, after that, we got the Rams. They're leaving the City of Angels and traveling up to the Mile High City to take on the Denver Broncos. Oh, do we have to talk about this?
No, Rams win.
Rams win.
I think it'll be close. I think it'll be similar to the KC game. Denver plays well at home, and they're like the Seahawks, not an easy team to beat at home. I think Rams are going to have another challenge this week. Maybe not as close to Seattle, but still a good game.
Yeah, no, Denver does play well at home, and it definitely is an advantage for them because they're playing a mile up in elevation. So it's an advantage for them, and I think that that always plays in their favor. I will take the Rams' prolific offense over the Broncos' mediocre defense.
Yeah, well, and you know, maybe getting out of the smog of LA and getting up to some clear mountain air will actually do good for the Rams.
That might do it.
Okay, we got the Jacksonville Jaguars. They haven't been in the swamps of Jacksonville in a minute. They are continuing on the road, going to Jerry World in Dallas, Texas, to take on the Cowboys. Jacksonville wins this game. I think it's going to be an ugly, ugly game. I think Dallas puts up less than 10 points.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think they will put up more than 10 points. They'll put up 11. Okay, it's just, I mean, they won't put up a whole lot of points, but Jacksonville, I think, is going to bounce back from this shellacking that they just took this last week. So, Jacksonville on the road in Dallas, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going 24-9. 24-9, final score in that game.
I'll go 23-13.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. That sounds good.
So, after that, Baltimore, they're leaving the state of Maryland. They're headed down south. To the birthplace of Jack Daniel's whiskey, they are taking on the Tennessee Titans. I got Baltimore in this game. I think they will bounce back from this game from the Browns. I think the Ravens are a formidable team. They're not the best team in that division, nor let alone the league. But I think they are better than the Tennessee Titans, and I have the Baltimore Ravens winning on the road in Tennessee.
All right, I have Tennessee at home. These are two teams that lost close games last week that they probably should have won. Baltimore losing to Cleveland, Tennessee losing to Buffalo. I think Tennessee bounces back at home. These are a battle of two top five defenses. They're both defenses that are in the top five so far this year. I think it's going to be a tough, rough battle. I think that's the kind of game that the Titans are going to win this year, and I think we're going to see it here at home. I've got Tennessee. And now, the only good game of this week, honestly, like great game, I'll say great game. There are some good matchups. The only great matchup this week is the Wonder Kid himself, Patrick Mahomes, as Bill Simmons says, the Steph Curry of the NFL, going to the house that Bill Belichick built in New England, in Foxborough, Gillette Stadium, to take on Tom Brady. We have a matchup of the greatest quarterback of all time, and then versus Tom Brady. So I'm very excited to see this.
as am I. This is going to be a great matchup. I'm going to flip a coin right now.
Okay.
Right here, live. Actually, it's going to be my Copenhagen game. I'm going to flip a coin. Heads, it's New England. Tails, it's Kansas City. You ready?
I'm so ready.
All right, here we go. It's up. We are going with Kansas City on the road in New England. Guys, you could really flip a coin here and be okay with it. Now, am I a little worried that it came out tails as Kansas City? Absolutely, because New England plays so well at home. But I have a lot of faith in Pat Mahomes. They're 5-0. They're 5-0, explosive offense against a Pats defense, which is middle of the road. Okay, they're top 15, but they're definitely not one of the top defenses out there right now. I'm going to go with Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. This is really close. I have Kansas City for me. One, because the defense has looked better the last few weeks. They have looked better. That gives me some hope that they could do a little bit, enough to get a win. They're not going to shut down. This is going to be a shootout. We're looking at, you know, both teams probably in the high 20s to low 30s. But I think Kansas City pulls this off on the road. I will pull up these little league rankings. Chiefs are 4th in offense, 32nd in defense. The Patriots are 19th in offense and 18th in defense. So they're kind of right in the middle. But like you said, at home, that's a very scary place to play. In New England, but I'm going to go with Kansas City as well. A great Sunday night matchup. We've actually had some very good Sunday night games. We've been really lucky.
Monday night football. The San Francisco 49ers are leaving the gateway, or not the gateway to the West. Sorry, that's St. Louis. They're leaving the West Coast, the Bay Area, headed up to Lambeau Field, the land of the cheeseheads, to take on the Green Bay Packers. I got Green Bay. I think that even though Aaron Rodgers obviously is hobbled, something is not right with him. He plays extremely well at Lambeau, and I could see the Packers pulling this one off in probably a closer game than you guys would think. I'm going to say 27-21.
Okay. All right. Mitch, I have the upset of the week here. Niners on the road Monday night in Lambeau. Don't ask me why. I just have a gut feeling about this. I don't know. I don't like this Packers team. They looked very bad. They've looked very bad at times throughout this season. I don't even remember if they won last week. Did they win last week?
No, they lost to the Lions, 31-23.
Oh, that was a very ugly game. I actually remember it. Now I watched that. I did watch that. It was very ugly. Very, very ugly. They looked ugly against the Redskins, looked ugly against the Lions. They have not looked good. The Niners, even without Jimmy G, they were competitive against the Chargers. They were competitive against the Cardinals. I think they eke out a win here. A little bit of luck, a little bit of magic. C.J. Beathard, maybe not the most handsome man in the NFL, but he can get a win on the road in Lambeau.
He's definitely not the most handsome man in the NFL. Jimmy G is the most handsome man in the NFL. But C.J. Beathard, he might be top 50.
That's actually pretty good. There's a lot of players in NFL.
Yeah, there's a lot of players. I mean,
he
top
looks,
50.
I will have to say, with his helmet on and the way his facial hair is, he looks really gross. Like, you can just kind of see his, like, blonde mustache. It's not a good look.
Yeah, he's got the whole Boomer Esiason thing going on with the blonde mustache. I don't like it.
Not a good look. He should ask Jimmy G for some tips. Some grooming.
Well, I'm sure Jimmy G has a ton of tips.
Yeah, I think
he's
so.
He's the most handsome guy in the NFL, so.
Absolutely. Guys, that is our NFL picks for this week. Like I said earlier, I am up by 4 games. I was 10-5 last week. Mitch was 9-6. And we're pretty similar on some of these, but you know, we got some differences here, and I think we're going to see some interesting games this week.
You know what I'm more proud of is that we've only been on the losing end of this one time. So,
no, we've picked very well this season.
So, yeah, so I'm not too, you know, I feel pretty good about it even though I am down 4 games, and that it's early, but I may have to shave my head and wear a jersey of the Mormon's choice.
Mm.
It's a little bit frightening, but I got to chip away at this deficit week by week, and I think that maybe we might get this done this week, you guys. If you're Team Mitchmo, comment on the Instagram, hashtag Team Mitchmo. If you're Team Mormon, comment on the Instagram or the Twitter, hashtag Team Mormon. Let us know which team you are on going forward.
Yeah, if you use hashtag Team Mormon and post on the Instagram, you're probably going to get like mass followed by a bunch of weird like Mormon Instagram accounts.
Yeah,
so just
LDS,
be aware.
LDS is going to follow you.
Just be aware of that. But yeah, guys, that is all we have today for the episode. We appreciate the listens, the follows. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a comment and a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps out a lot. We appreciate those who have done so already. As we mentioned earlier in the episode, be sure to follow the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. All of that info is in the show notes, so check those out. We are on Spotify. We are on Simplecast. We're on Apple Podcasts. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us.
Absolutely. Comment on the Instagram posts. Comment on the Twitter. Comment on the Apple Podcast, the Spotify. Tell us we suck. That's the only way we can get better.
Yep, and we will catch you next week.
See ya!